Everyone, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast, Women Who Stutter, Our Story. I have a very special guest on today. She's going to explain who she is and what she does. But first, I'd like to just start off with saying, hey, Steph, good to have you on the show today.
Hello, thanks for having me, Pam.
Yeah. So to get started, would you introduce yourself to us, who you are, what you do, what keeps you busy?
Sure. So I am Steph Lepsack. My name's Stephanie, but everyone calls me Steph. If you call me Steph, then I'm going to think I'm in trouble or something. So call me Steph. It's totally cool. And gosh, I'm a speech language pathologist. I've been a speech pathologist for about 14 years now. And I am a wife and a mother of two young children. My daughter Mary is 8 and my son Carter is 7. So yeah, so we have a fun, oh, and we have a pug named Richie and a Bengal cat named Jubilee. So our house is never quiet.
It sounds it, and it sounds like you're very busy, you know, working. Are you working a full-time job?
So that's a really, that's kind of the question of the year. That's a really good question. I don't know. No, I just started a private practice. It's been over a year since I started it, but I've kind of had an up and down health journey. So I just signed a lease for an office in downtown Denver. So
that's exciting.
I know it's intimidating, but exciting. so I have an office now for my private practice, and I am there 4 days a week. And then 2 days a week, I have opened because I work per diem at a downtown Denver hospital called Presbyterian St. Luke's. So I'm there sometimes as well, because I'm an acute care inpatient rehab SLP as well. Mm-hmm. And I also am an adjunct professor at Baylor, and I teach their stuttering cluttering course online for their online program, grad program. So I do that one night a week as well. I teach a course section. Yep.
I would say you're busy. what interested you about being an SLP? I mean, how did you get involved?
Yeah, so I'm a speech pathologist because my brother Jasper is a person who stutters. He stuttered since around the age of 6, and I grew up as a sibling of somebody who stutters, and I always wanted to. It was an interesting process for me, because when I initially wanted to be a speech pathologist, I thought that I wanted to put on a cape and like save better, right? That's what I thought it was going to be. I thought, just being transparent, I thought it was going to be me helping people. And I do help people, but it was a very different experience from what I initially thought. He's my reason for being a speech pathologist, but people who stutter actually ended up saving me. So, so I've had quite the opposite experience. However, I do focus on the treatment of people who stutter in my private practice. It's not the only entity that I treat, but yeah, my journey with the why is very, very interesting, because, people who stutter can speak for themselves. They don't need, I used to identify someone fluent. Now I identify as somebody who stutters, and we can talk about that in a little bit, but yeah, you guys can speak, like, people who stutter, we can speak for ourselves, and we don't need people speaking for us. And I didn't know that. And I learned so much going into this for sure.
Yeah, so you mentioned that your brother stutters. So, growing up, like, did you try to protect him? Did you try to speak for him?
I never tried to speak for him, but I was very protective of him. I don't ever remember any friends. He's 5.5 years older than me. So, like when he was in high school, upper high school, I was in lower junior high type thing. But I don't remember like friends saying anything about it behind his back. You know, he had good friends. He was homecoming king. He was a National Honor Society. He had good friends growing up, but what I do remember was our family talking about it behind his back. I remember feeling as a young child feeling really sad about that. It was times when he wasn't present, and I thought, not fair. He's not here to defend himself, right? And that's when I kind of started to get the passion to advocate for people to have a voice for themselves. Because there were moments, even when I was 6 or 7 years old, when Jasper wasn't present, and I'm like, great, this isn't right. I knew it wasn't right, you know. And it was really hurtful because he, you know, even now to this day, we're very, very close, him and I. You know, I always tell people he's like my second person because I'm married and husband, and then there's my brother, and we're very, very close. Yeah.
What types of things did your family talk about when your brother wasn't around?
Just their concern for his stuttering. And when I think about it, I think more for the frequency of his stuttering and how sometimes it would increase and sometimes it wouldn't. And in times when it would increase, I remember them talking about it being a concern, like as if it were a quote unquote, and I'm doing quotation here with my hands, a problem, right? And that was very, very hurtful to me as his sister, because not only have I always held my brother paramount in my life, right? He's my hero. He could do no wrong, and he hung the moon to me and always has, right? As my big brother. And so when they would talk about this, I knew even when as a young girl, I thought there's nothing wrong with the way he talks. There's nothing wrong with him the way he is. And I even knew that as a young child, right? And so it just kind of broke my heart to witness that. And I know how parents are can be concerned, and that's valid for parents to have concerns and feelings. But usually the talking happened when it wasn't there. So he had no agency in the deal, right? He had no say in it. You know, it was tough. Yeah.
Were your parents embarrassed that their child stuttered?
I don't know that it was embarrassment. I don't know if it was that, just they talked about it like it was a problem that needed to be fixed. Like oh yeah, he's stuttering a lot more, like as if it were concerning. That's what I remember the tone being. And that was always very, very hurtful to me. You know, my brother, and he's okay if I share this because I've got permission. He to this day he's never had speech therapy. You know, when I was in graduate school, I never said, hey Jasper, can I talk to you about this? Can I? That would have crossed a very sacred line with him. And I never crossed it. I knew I never needed to cross it. He's never had therapy, and that's okay with him, and that's okay with me, and that's his thing. And I actually kind of love that he's never had speech therapy. I love that about him.
Yeah, because he thinks that he's okay the way he is. Is that what you think?
I think so. And I just don't know that it's something he ever wanted to do. Yeah, we've never actually really talked about why he's never had it, but I've just never asked and never prompted. But I think it's pretty cool, you know.
Well, the reason I asked is that I started stuttering around five, so probably just around the age that Jasper did. And my stuttering to my father was a huge issue with him. He yelled and screamed at me when I stuttered. He told me to, you know, shut up. You know, we don't talk that way. And I just remember vividly that when he would yell at me and get so angry, he would turn red for one thing. And then he had like a vein in his forehead that would throb when he was really angry. So that message to me was he was embarrassed and it was tarnishing his image. So I never had speech therapy as a child, even though a couple of teachers recommended it. He was not going for it because that would look bad on him. So those are my early memories of stuttering. I don't remember the actual stuttering. I remember the reactions that I got for my stuttering. So it sounds to me, obviously, my situation was different than Jasper's situation, but the concern that your parents felt in my case came out of fear and anger that my dad didn't want to look bad. So I didn't have therapy either until I tried therapy when I was in my very early 40s, and it didn't work for a number of reasons. And I left after only a year. But it's just interesting how people recall their 5 and 6 year old selves and what you remember the most. So that's why I had asked about that, because my early stuttering just, you know, sucked. I remember the bad things. You know, I don't remember my parents being supportive. And I think if they'd been, my journey would have been so much better. And I wouldn't have felt like I had to hide it all the time, because I thought my job was to hide something bad from my father so that if I didn't stutter, I wouldn't get those negative reactions, you know?
I think, you know, even with our father, so my brother and I have different moms, random fact, and our father, when I started to stutter, I started to stutter at the age of 36 from a head injury, and his comments even to me were based very much on outward stuttering pattern. So he would call me and he would say, wow, you stuttered a lot less this time. He always had a comment about it. Or, okay, you stuttered a lot more today. Are you okay? And then eventually he said, wow, you're barely stuttering. You're doing really well. And I thought, it made me want to cringe.
Right.
Very concerned about, and that's how he treated it with my brother too. I'm very close with my dad. You know, he's a very lovely man, but he didn't realize how tarnishing his comments are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did Jasper think when you started stuttering due to the injury? What was his reaction?
We didn't really talk about it that much. It wasn't a subject that we talked about, to be honest. I kind of did tell him, like, okay, now I know how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Which I had no idea how it felt. You know, when you are fluent, you do your best and attempt to put yourself in the shoes of the person you're serving in the therapy room or your friends or whoever it might be, your family member,
mm-hmm.
the best you can do. Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with empathy and doing that, but that's all you can do. And that's enough a a lot of cases, but since I've experienced it now, it kind of heightened everything to a different level. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting experience for sure. I did go silent for a little while. And I can share that, not from feelings of shame, but from physical pain. Yeah. I was blocking so much when I first started to stutter that it was physically painful on my lung disease process to stutter. And that's what made me go quiet for a little while, was that I was stuttering so much in the beginning when my brain incident first happened, that it was so much effort to try. And so, you know, I had just gone through a big respiratory event as well. So it was so painful when I stuttered that that's what made me use my phone to communicate.
So for listeners, your stuttering is like a form of neurogenic stuttering, if I'm correct.
Yep.
Can you just explain that briefly to those that are listening, but that may not be aware of that?
Yeah. So I'm actually kind of an anomaly because I have a brother who stutters, and so stuttering may run in our family somewhere. We're not sure where, but there could be a genetic component to stuttering in our family. I've also gone through a significant amount of medical trauma and something called psychogenic stuttering. Sometimes people start stuttering from a traumatic event. But I also had a neurological incident in my brain. What can happen with some people is that when you have a stroke or when you have a, you know, head injury of some sort, you can start stuttering from that. With me, I am a person, for those that don't know, most people know, I feel like, but for those that don't, I'm a person that lives with lung disease, and I had an incident where I stopped breathing, my vitals were tanking, and so they intubated me, they put me on the ventilator, and I woke up on the ventilator, unable to see. I had pretty marked cognitive deficits at the time. It was like a hypoxic brain injury, basically. And then I started to stutter. So the assumption is that it's neurogenic, because as I rehabbed, you know, I went through PT, OT, and speech, and I worked on my cognition and my short-term memory, because it was, my short-term memory is about, was about 10 minutes long. Yeah. Like I remember I was on my cell phone and I would talk to people on FaceTime, and I remember I'd have to take a picture of them. I have a bunch of pictures of people on my phone because I wouldn't remember who I talked to.
That must have been so frustrating.
It was frustrating and it was extremely scary. And sometimes it was frustrating because people would like laugh. Like some of my good friends would say, well, remember I told you that? And I'm like, no, I don't remember. And they're like, that's because your brain is broken. Like I would get comments like that. And it was really hurtful, actually, because I was working really hard, trying really hard. I thought my career was over. I mean, it was just a very emotional time. And then at the same time, I started stuttering. And for me, I was so involved in the stuttering community as someone fluent, as an ally already, that I was okay with stuttering. I will tell you, the second day that I was stuttering in the hospital where I was in the hospital bed, once I was extubated, I could speak, I was stuttering, all this stuff. Somebody accused me of faking stuttering right off. And they were like, you weren't doing this. I've had you before, like a nurse, you weren't stuttering. And it made me cry. I was like, okay, it made me realize this is a little bit of an example of what my friends go through, right? Just a tiny hint of an example of what some of my friends have gone through their whole life, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And why would somebody want a fake stuttering? You know, like that's, you know, there's a friend of, I think both of ours, Nina G, who's a comedian, and she often mentions that people think that she's trying to fake stuttering so that it can be part of her gig, you know. But my basic question is, why would somebody want to fake it? I mean, that kind of contradicts what, you know, normal fluency is all about. So why do you think people thought you were faking it?
I don't know. I think it's because they knew me before and they knew me to be fluent. And so I think they just assumed that's not real. Mm-hmm. And no, this is how I'm talking and you're exhausting me because I'm having to explain to you that it's not fake. I will tell you, Pam, people do fake stuttering sometimes. I've had clients, people who have come in, we call it malingering, and it takes a few visits sometimes to catch on. Mm-hmm. But usually there's a deep rooted reason why people do it. We usually don't tell people you're faking and
right.
You know, passion on people like that, because at the root of it, why would somebody feel like they have to act like there's something they're not? You know, usually there's some really sad, deep-rooted reasons fake something they're not. And I usually have a lot of compassion for those individuals. And I've had one person in my whole career walk in who was malingering. And I caught on, you know, and the thing is with counseling, the stuttering just goes away. And doesn't happen with that, right? That doesn't happen through stuttering. And so, you know, but that person ends up needing some further help than just speech pathology.
Right.
But yeah, I got accused of faking right away. And I thought, why, of all the things I go through medically, why would I fake this? Like, you know, like, why would you say that? And so I already was having some comments that I thought, and that first comment from someone made me realize, wow, this is what people go through all the time. And this is what people grew up going through. And it was just so eye-opening. It was frustrating. It was maddening. It was all the things. And it's not what made me go silent. The physical pain was what made me go a little silent, but it was just like, oh my gosh, it just made me that much more empathetic.
Yeah. Why? Wow. That's, you know, so the reason I asked about the neurogenic stuttering is I'm not always sure that people understand that there's different types of stuttering. Early child fluency disorder, and then there is late onset stuttering, and then there's the neurogenic stuttering that usually manifest through some type of injury. And you said it was either a head injury, like a TBI, or it could be a stroke. So, you know, I think people just think stuttering is, oh, you know, stuttering. And, you know, there's different reasons behind stuttering. And those like myself that have stuttered for, you know, basically my lifetime, you know, I have a different experience than people that stutter later on in life. So, I'm glad we were kind of able to clarify that, because maybe that's part of the reason why people think that you were faking, you know, because you've hadn't stuttered your whole life.
Right. Yeah. And part of me thinks, well, they don't know about stuttering like we do. I don't blame them. I mean, now you would think someone would have more couth than to say you're faking, you know, but it did give me the opportunity to educate that person about stuttering. And once I did, she felt so bad. And
it
being a really beautiful moment for me and for her, because she's like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so I thought, now you do. And right. patients with Parkinson's, people who I serve with Parkinson's, I prefer to say people I serve than patient. I'm really trying to, in the hospital, we call them patients. And I even write people I serve in my hospital notes, and people look at me like I'm crazy when I work with all the patients, but I'm like, no, that makes me feel like a piece of paper. I'm going to call them a person.
Right.
In the habit of doing that. People with Parkinson's also might stutter neurogenically from Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. I've seen that quite a bit.
Well, you know, the reason that I asked about that is, you know, some people who've stuttered since the beginning, and I told you what the negative reactions that I had, that's what drove me to hide. And that's what drove me essentially to be a covert stutterer. So, you know, when I began to lose the ability to do that, because eventually the brain just gets tired of, you know, circumlocution, word switching at the last time, somebody tell that you were going to say one thing, but you actually wind up saying something else. I believe that, you know, stuttering, and you mentioned counseling, stuttering, especially if somebody has shame of it, which I did, because I thought it was something wrong and that I was doing something bad. I tend to think of stuttering as like an onion that you have to like peel back all the layers to really get to not just why the person stutters, but how it makes them feel and all that other complex stuff, you know. So I think people just look at stuttering as, you know, what does or doesn't come out of our mouth. And there's so many other things. And you mentioned the counseling component. And personally, I think that, you know, good speech therapists need to understand that and incorporate that when you're helping a person that stutters. Do you agree? Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. Counseling is such a big deal. It is within our scope of practice as speech pathologists. It's listed in our code of ethics and in our scope of practice. And to be honest, and I'll just kind of be transparent and say this, our graduate programs are just catching on to how important it truly is, not just in treating people who stutter, but in treating people with voice and in treating people with aphasia and dysphagia and these other entities that we treat. We counsel in everything that we do. And now that I have been through what I've been through medically as a person with lung disease, in addition to the stuttering, right? With all of it, I counsel more than I ever have, even as an acute care speech pathologist. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I've had clinicians come in my room as a hospital patient, because I'm in the hospital a lot less now. Yay. Mm-hmm. But they're in and they're out, and I'm just a person on their list for the day. And you can tell that. That's the vibe. Now, when I go in someone's room, I ask them how they're doing, and they say, oh, am I swallowing this? And I say, no, how are you doing? And they say, no one's asked me that.
Yeah.
I tend to spend 30 minutes in people's rooms, not 15. And since I've started counseling with people in the hospital, it has revitalized my clinical practice. And I feel like, you know, there's a meme that goes around on Facebook. This is a random comment, I'm sorry, but there's a meme that goes around on Facebook, and it's about a Lyft driver or an Uber driver. I don't remember which company, but it says, I took a Lyft today, and now I know about the person's cousin's uncle and their whole, like, it means that you get to know the person because you're like that. You get to know people. I could probably say the same with the people I serve in the hospital now. Mm-hmm. I thought that I was empathetic and I took the time before, and I realized I really wasn't. You know, I've done this for 14 years now, and I feel like I'm just getting started with tapping in on how to really do this, mm-hmm. right? And make help people feel like they matter, because when you're in the hospital, it's traumatizing. Mm-hmm. When I ask people, no, how are you doing? Like emotionally, how are you handling all of this change? They look at me like, wow, you hit the nail on the head, or mm-hmm. you hit it on the nose. And people just say, thank you. I do more recommended referrals. I can't refer myself, but like to the doctor, the hospitalist, to chaplains, to psychologists, to et cetera, that I ever have, getting mm-hmm. people they need, because it's so much more than just what's on paper.
And I also like the way that you said a little while ago, but you just emphasize it again right now, the people that you serve to help them manage or feel better about their stuttering. One thing that I have always hated about stuttering is when somebody calls themselves a person that's going to treat a patient. And, you know, for me, that connotates I'm ill, there's something wrong, and I'm going to a doctor to get a short-term fix. And it's much more comforting for me to know that you're not thinking of me as a patient. You're thinking of me as a person who happens to stutter that may need some support, you know, that it's just not a patient doctor relationship. And when you talk about, you know, being a therapist who's treating a patient, that really sends a real bug up my arse, that's not the way I believe that it should be perceived. And it sounds like you really don't think that either, because of the way that you've termed who you are and who you help.
Right. And I kind of had to experience things as a patient to learn that as a patient. And I say that because that's what I'm called most of the time. Mm-hmm. Right. I had to experience some things the hard way.
Right.
To learn that and to learn how to treat people even better in the therapy room. You know, I thought I was empathetic before. Now I've really learned even more mm-hmm. about humanistic response and how, you know, the first day of class with my Baylor students, I'm an adjunct professor at Baylor, like I mentioned, and the first day of class, I tell my students, when someone who stutters or clutters comes into your treatment room and they walk through the door, that's a moment. Right. And if you miss that moment, then they may never go to therapy again.
Right, right.
And if you miss that moment, then you have completely missed the purpose of why they're there. And I hope they take that and run with it, because that's kind of the heart of what we do, right?
Right.
I can tell you I missed the reason why someone came through my door for years. Mm. I missed it for years, and I had to learn to do better. And almost fall on my face a little bit to get there, right? And I'm still learning. I'm always learning, and that's beautiful. But yeah, I kind of had to experience some things for myself as a person in the hospital and as a person being served medically and all these things to realize, wow, this is more than I thought, right? Mm. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned also like the different things that you deal with, you know, in the hospital, in a therapy room. So speech language pathology is so broad, you know, but why have you chosen to focus on stuttering?
Because of my brother.
Okay.
You don't meet very many people, speech pathologists, who are medical speech pathologists and focus on stuttering, because we don't treat stuttering in acute care. Mm. When I'm in ICU, I've got trachs, vents, you know, a lot of critical things. And, but I've always focused either in outpatient setting, in schools, I've worked schools sometimes, but I've always focused my CEUs, my, you know, of course I do swallowing and all kinds of other CEUs too. But I've always had this passion and love and research want for stuttering because of my brother. He's my why in this profession, and he will always be my why. And I love medical. I'm working on pursuing my BCSF. I'm working on pursuing my BCSS also, which is specialty in swallowing as well. Okay. I've probably treated swallowing people more than I have people who stutter, which is interesting because I'm so involved in the stuttering community. But I love both. And everyone says, what do you love? And I'm like, you know, I'm kind of the speech pathologist that couldn't decide. So I love the thrill of working in a hospital, but I love my clinical background in stuttering because it really helps me to counsel people in acute care because people just don't get that. And I truly feel like what I've gone through medically, but also my involvement in the stuttering world has really helped my clinical skill set and et cetera in acute care and in trauma and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So would you say you're an ally?
With stuttering?
Yeah.
For sure. I do identify as somebody who stutters, but when people call me an ally, I'm like, yeah, I don't say no. I think so. You know, I didn't grow up stuttering. I do have an experience with stuttering. You won't hear me stutter now unless I'm extremely tired or my brain is overloaded cognitively. If I have a lot going on at once, you'll hear me stutter. If I'm stuck in a lot of traffic, you'll hear me stutter. And it's a brain thing. But yeah, a lot of people, some people identify me as a person who stutters. Some people identify me as an ally. I'm not picky either way. You know, my story with stuttering is different, and I don't claim to know what it's like to grow up as a person who stutters. I do claim to know what it's like to grow up with lung disease, but not with stuttering. Mm-hmm. So you can call me whatever you like. I'm not picky. Yeah. I think I stutter, but I do clarify it's different, and this is why, and this is how. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the reason, you know, that I asked about being an ally, that's probably one of the most important things to me, you know, having an ally, particularly as a person who stutters, means that I've kind of got somebody that understands, is willing to educate themselves more about stuttering. And, you know, in those rare moments, like kind of has my back, you know, like if somebody's, you know, being, you know, dismissive of me or, you know, making negative comments, an ally will jump in and, you know, let people know, hey, that's not cool, you know, let, you know, and kind of like make me feel like, you know, they have my back. And I think anybody that has, you know, any type of condition that is against the norm, but particularly with stuttering, because communication is taken for granted, but anybody, you know, can have an ally, and that can be so helpful in my self-esteem, you know, that I know somebody, you know, is there for me and tries to or does understand the experience.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. I tell people that I'm around stuttering all the time because all of my best friends stutter. And so like, I don't really even notice stuttering anymore. Like sometimes I'll have someone say, what did you think of that person stuttering? And I'll say, I didn't even notice it because like, I don't notice it. I'm listening to your content, not you're stuttering, mm-hmm. right? I don't have on my clinician hat right now. And even when I do have on my clinician hat, I'm listening to content. I'm not listening to speaking patterns, you know? But I love that definition of ally, and I'm fully honored to hopefully fall into that category for people.
Yes, of course.
Because, you know, when you mentioned having someone's back, I will tell you, before I had a journey with stuttering, when I was fully fluent, you know, before I'd started to stutter from the brain event, somebody who stutters told me, "Steph, you're too passionate about stuttering." And I said, "What is that supposed to mean? Because you stutter and I don't." Was that a good comment? But I fully have someone's back. But I learned early on that people who stutter have their own voice, and they don't need people like me to speak for them at all. Only when it's wanted. Right. And like I told you in the beginning of our conversation, I thought that this was going to be something like, I'm going to put on my cape with the Superwoman emblem or whatever it is, Wonder Woman, or I don't know what, a telephone booth and come back thing. And that's absolutely not what it's been. My journey with lung disease has been so challenging. People who stutter have taught me to live. And they have taught me to live life more so than people with lung disease. I'm not in lung disease support groups. I'm in stuttering support groups because lung disease support groups wanted to talk about dying. And I didn't want to talk about that. Yeah. I wanted to talk about living with something. You know, yes, I have lung disease, but how do I live with a family, with kids? How do I work? How do I keep going? And stuttering support groups taught me that. Lung disease support groups did not teach me that. And so I fully credit people who stutter for saving me.
Yeah, and wow.
So, yeah. And so it's quite the opposite, right? Like young Steph speech path thought, I'm going to save people who stutter. Absolutely not. It was the other way around, literally. So that's a big part of my journey too, is that I tell people who stutter saved me. Not the other way around.
Yeah.
And people who stutter don't need saving.
Right.
They're just like anybody else. And if they want your help, they'll ask for it. But if they don't want it, they don't need it.
Right. And people who stutter, you know, it's just a different way of talking. It's just a different conversation. And you're right. We don't need to be saved. You know, what we need to be is able to live our best life. And sometimes that's with stuttering, or, you know, going to a therapist who might help them, you know, modify their stuttering a bit so that it's easier and more comfortable, you know. But essentially, you know, I want to live my best life. And if that includes speaking differently, that's okay, you know?
Right.
So kind of in wind down mode, you mentioned that you're very involved in the stuttering community. And I believe we first met at an NSA conference that you were at. And you were at like the CEU research symposium, and I snuck in there because I wanted to hear one or two of the workshops. So have you been to other NSA conferences, and do you think those are as helpful for people who don't stutter as they are for those of us that do?
Oh my goodness. I love that question, Pam. Oh my gosh, I love the question so much. So that was my first NSA conference to attend. My brother came with me, and that was his also first time to like talk about his stuttering, meet other people who stutter. That conference changed both of our lives. My brother was initiating conversations with people. He's not, like, despite in high school that he was homecoming king and stuff, in later years, he's not been the most social person. He's pretty covert. And I think he realized how covert he is at that NSA conference. And like the second night we were there, we were sharing a room and he's like, Steph, can these people hang out in our room? And I'm like, yeah, they can hang out in our room. And who are you? And what did you do with my brother? Like, I could cry still when I talk about what that conference did for his life and for his confidence and his self-esteem, just so many beautiful things. And then also what it did for me as well. I went to the research symposium and then I intentionally went to workshops that were not SLP geared. Because I wanted to soak it all in. I wanted to hear people who stutter stories. I wanted to hear what they go through. That's also when I had first started getting sick. And that's also when I realized this is where I need to be for my own support with lung disease, mm-hmm. not lung disease support groups. Right. That's when I went through that whole emotional process, was in Fort Lauderdale at that conference. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in Austin. I was too sick. But I will be at NSA this summer. I'm registered. Cool. Yeah, I'm super excited. So that was my first one. I was supposed to be going to Montreal for the JWCSC. I just canceled my trip just because of COVID risk. I spooked. Denver's up to yellow. Some areas in Wisconsin are up to red with risk. I haven't, knock on wood, got COVID yet this whole time. And so I'm just trying to be protective, but right. I'm hopeful that I'll be at NSA. I really wanted to go to Liverpool. It's on my list. I want to go so bad. I love being a part of it all. And I learned so much about life and doing life with, I could use words like resilience and pushing through and, you know, all these words, but then doing life when it's hard too, and like being willing to, able to admit that and learning how to admit that and that being okay too. Right. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, I learned so much. I fully believe, and this was the subject of my, WSN, Stutterfest talk, was that support groups for people who stutter can absolutely be revitalizing for people who don't stutter, because mm-hmm. everybody's going through something. And when you hear someone who stutters story about what people who stutter go through on a normal basis and what you have to go through, to just get through a conversation, and the courage and the strength and all of those things, it's so inspiring and applicable to so many things in life. It's really powerful.
Yeah. And that's a great way to end, the word powerful. It's such a great way to end. Steph, thank you so much for being a guest today. And being so honest, this is going to help a lot of people, I believe. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Pam, for having me. It's been an honor.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.